WilliamHill.us. William Hill is a proud partner of the Vegas Golden Knights.
Live from the capital of Raider Nation, Las Vegas, Nevada, it's Silver and Black Today, your daily dose of all things Las Vegas Raiders football. News, views, guests, and your phone calls are all part of the game plan. There's only one nation, and it listens here. Now your host, Scott Gulbranson.
Welcome back. Hour number two of Silver and Black Today here on this Friday. From the capital of Raider Nation, Las Vegas, Nevada, I'm Scott Gulbranson, and as always, we're powered by our good friends, Salmon Ash Injury Attorneys, 702-820-1234. You can get involved with the show, 702-365-9200 is the Raider Nation radio listener hotline. Lots of folks I know want to talk about the Aguilar story. We'll get to that in just a minute. But first, we go out on our newsmaker line and we bring in a guest who we've had several times here on the show. Cody Benjamin covers the NFL for CBS Sports, also the author of a new book that I cannot wait to read. And I always mention it when he comes on because, like him, I am a movie buff. It's called Why We Need the Movies. You can check it out. It's available on Amazon.com. I highly recommend it. Cody, thanks for being with us today on this Friday.
Hey, Scott. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate the book shout-out, as always. Looking forward to talking some football with you.
All right. So let's get into, clearly we spent a lot of time yesterday, and if not for the fact that the story broke from our good friend Vic Tafer about Nelson Aguilar's tirade in the locker room for the Raiders, I probably would have led the show with this. But the Deshaun Watson trade, of course, the Texans named their new head coach today, and at that press conference, they were asked about Deshaun Watson, the fact that he's demanded a trade, and of course the Texans said, we're not going to trade him. We're not looking to trade him, which is also just posturing. But your story up on CBSSports.com, which people can go find by searching your name, there's a list of teams that you looked at as possible suitors for the Texans' superstar quarterback. And these are teams, now knowing that Deshaun Watson has the ability to okay or nix a trade, you went through some of these. And so I want to talk to you first about that point. You know, a lot of people are like, see, they're not going to trade him. And I keep telling people, look, Deshaun Watson's value as a trade token is going to be between now and the draft. And of course the Texans are going to say they're not going to trade him because they want to get as much as possible. Talk a little bit about that posturing that goes into a situation where a player's not happy and they want to be traded and the team says they won't trade him.
Yeah, I mean, this was inevitable. I mean, now that we have the official request, at least reportedly, from Deshaun, the Texans have absolutely no choice. I mean, the strongest words, I was actually surprised, came from David Cauley, their new head coach, who basically, you know, he gave the closest thing to a definitive statement by saying, you know, he took the job expecting Deshaun Watson to be here. But again, you know, when a team says we have zero interest in trading a player, that means we have zero interest in trading him right now, or we have zero interest in trading him until the right offer comes in. I mean, unless they're coming out and saying that Deshaun Watson will be a Houston Texan in 2021, look, anything's on the table. Now, I guess that's not necessarily true. Anything's not on the table because Deshaun Watson, the big thing really is the trade clause. I mean, that he has say in where he's going to go. But I would also caution that people who think that is a deterrent to a trade, I just think it depends on the offers. Specifically, you know, Raiders fans that might be looking at the possibility, you know, could we actually get Deshaun Watson? I say don't write it off because the reports might be that Deshaun Watson prefers New York. Maybe he'd sign off on Miami. But let's say the offers don't come in. If his true number one goal is to not play for the Houston Texans, you better believe that he and his agent are going to consider whatever offers are there if the Texans are willing to play ball. I don't think it's a guarantee that Deshaun Watson is traded. The Texans are going to wait out a deal, even if their leverage is minimal. But I'm not writing off anything at this point.
Yeah, just as you say it in your piece, just a wild turn of events, right? When Watson, who back in September signs the second biggest contract in NFL history behind Patrick Mahomes, and now he's wanting out of Texas. And you look at this, Cody, and we'll stay with the Raiders for a second, then we'll get to some of the other teams since you brought it up. But if you look at the Raiders situation, and a lot of folks here who follow the team, who call into the show, they say the same thing every time, which is, well, we're not a quarterback away from being a championship team. Our defense is terrible. It's the reason they didn't make the playoffs last year. So why would we go out and get a quarterback that's owed $177 million? To which I say, he is a generational quarterback. I believe that. But talk a little bit about why, if you're the Raiders, this is something that you have to consider.
Yeah, honestly, so the most engagement that I tend to get from Raiders fans, at least, and this is a small sample size, but, you know, on Twitter, tends to be the people that are, their number one goal seems to be defending Derek Carr's job security, you know, that Raiders brass will not cut ties with him. And look, you'll give them credit, the Raiders have stood by him longer than I think most people expected. I mean, if it feels like we've been talking about potential Derek Carr replacements for years, it's because we have. But the guy, you know, he has been good. He's righted his career. You know, at best, we've seen he can be a top 10 quarterback, at least numbers-wise. John Gruden and Mike Mayock, they praised him at almost every turn, but they almost never closed the door on an upgrade. And, like, I think this is the key point here and what you're trying to, I think that this is the argument that you have, too. This is Deshaun Watson we're talking about. This isn't Andy Dalton. This isn't Matthew Stafford. This isn't even, I would go to say, Aaron Rodgers, who's a few years away from turning 40. This is Deshaun Watson, who is 25 years old, who, you know, 4 years ago went 12th overall. He just threw for almost 5,000 yards over 30 touchdowns for a dysfunctional team. So I think, you know, I think there's room to poke holes in this idea that acquiring even a quarterback like Deshaun Watson is going to instantly make the Raiders Super Bowl contenders, because, look, he was great with the Texans, and the Texans were still a bad team. But the fact is, the leap from Derek Carr to Deshaun Watson, and again, I think Derek Carr can be a good quarterback, is a good quarterback. The leap there is just, it's too much not to consider. If Mike Mayock isn't making the call, you know, at least making that call, I don't think he should be the general manager. I mean, this is almost the perfect John Gruden quarterback acquisition, because we talk every year about, you know, maybe John Gruden will look at this top quarterback prospect. He never drafts one high. He always goes with the veterans, either inherited or acquired. Watson gives you the best of both worlds. He comes in ready to go, and yet he's young enough he could be your guy for 10 to 15 years.
Yeah, great points. Cody Benjamin, CBS Sports, is our guest. Now, Cody, in your story, you talk, I'll go to the top four teams that you kind of list as possible destinations: the Jets, the Saints, the Bears, and Bill Belichick and the Patriots. If you had to kind of think through the possibilities and these teams, the draft capital, players that they could move to go get a Deshaun Watson, who do you put up there as maybe the out of those top four teams who could probably get it done the easiest, or I should say probably have the most force of will to get it done?
Yeah, honestly, those four teams, or even the list in general, I think was catered more towards, and even you reading it back reminds me, catered more towards the fit for the team. You know, the Patriots would absolutely love to. I mean, the fit in there with Bill Belichick, for them to be able to, from a New England perspective, you know, a year after losing Tom Brady, get Deshaun Watson as the successor. You know, it only took an extra year. I think it's more geared towards the team side. The Saints, you look at their salary cap situation, very ugly. I mean, they've worked around things before, but that feels like something that, wow, if Sean Payton could pull that one over on the league, you know, going from Drew Brees to Deshaun Watson, that'd be great. I think from a realistic standpoint, you know, if there were offers from the Patriots, if there were offers from the Saints, I don't think those are going to be hold-ups for Deshaun Watson. I mean, to go and play for New Orleans or New England. And it sounds like from the reports, he's willing to go to New York, and a lot of that has to do with their head coaching hire. You know, I think if you look at, you got to look at who's going to be able to offer the most, because if Houston's really going to hold out, you know, let's say they're not settling for anything less than, you know, let's say four first-round picks and something else. You know, that's a team like teams like the Jets and the Dolphins, who've already expended a lot of high picks, are going to have to ask themselves, if we bring this guy in, are we going to be able to surround him with anyone? So it's tough. I mean, I think, you know, the easy answer right now is the Dolphins or the Jets. But, I mean, I honestly wouldn't be stunned if, you know, there's a GM or there's a coach out there who's just, you know, they see this guy on the market and they see an unprecedented opportunity. You know, a team like the Patriots, it wouldn't stun me, especially with the connections in their front office between Houston and New England.
Now, also, Cody, you mentioned Aaron Rodgers there, and I know you also had a similar list for Aaron Rodgers. I'm under the belief that I just don't think Aaron Rodgers will go anywhere. I think he's going to probably have some big conversations with the front office there about getting him some help. But what are the chances, do you think? You think I'm wrong about that? Do you think there's actually an opportunity for someone to acquire Aaron Rodgers with what he's got going at his advanced age?
I think the more likely scenario, it's fun to speculate. I mean, that's always one of those where, you know, we have enough quarterbacks this offseason to speculate about, but, you know, a guy like Aaron Rodgers, that's where we're talking Tom Brady, Peyton Manning territory in terms of movement. I think the more likely thing is what you've laid out. This is in the long run, it's probably going to end up looking like a few days of a public power struggle, and it really wasn't, you know, that nasty, but this is Aaron Rodgers saying, "We've made it to the NFC Championship 2 years in a row. My clock is ticking. You know, we need to be serious about, you know, let's maybe not spend the next first-round pick on a quarterback who's going to play third string all year. Let's maybe not spend," and A.J. Dillon did some good stuff, but let's prioritize what we need to prioritize, and that may include a new contract. That may include dangling Jordan Love for whatever you can get if he's going to be around for the next 4 or 5 years. So I think that's more likely. It's just a fun idea to think about Aaron Rodgers. I wouldn't rule out in 2022 or 2023 Aaron Rodgers finishing his career somewhere else.
Yeah, makes sense. And Cody, before we let you go, clearly you are a Philly sports fan. Nick Sirianni, the head coach now of the Eagles, what do you feel about that hire, and also how he's going to be able to manage that quarterback situation there with Wentz?
Man, I wish I had just a clear answer on the quarterback situation, because that's the one that everyone wants to know the answer to. And I think he walks into, you know, quite frankly, a mess in Philadelphia. I think that if you just look at the trajectory, the reason that Doug Peterson is no longer coached there, it has to do with him, but it also has to do with that broken relationship between the quarterback. Mm-hmm. It has to do with poor management from the general manager who, you know, in Nick Sirianni's press conference today, you know, he's basically bowing down to Howie Roseman, the general manager. So the power structure is set up to continue much like it has. But yeah, that quarterback situation, I think I'm intrigued by the hire. I think he comes off, he's got a good resume. He's an ascending young offensive mind, came up under Frank Reich. It's really the question that needs to be answered is Carson Wentz willing to step in and compete, whether he's handed the job or there's an open competition? Is he willing to even say, "I'll try this out with a new coach in Philadelphia"? Because, you know, if not, I mean, we have another quarterback to throw into this carousel this offseason.
Yeah, there you go. Cody Benjamin, you can follow him on Twitter, Cody J. Benjamin. You can check out his work at CBSSports.com. Cody, as always, thanks so much for being generous with your time today, buddy.
Hey, no problem. I appreciate having me on, Scott.
All right, there you go, Cody Benjamin. Interesting stuff there. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll get back to your call. 702-365-9200 is the number. This is Silver and Black today on Raider Nation Radio.
The autumn wind is a raider, and when it blows, it comes from the Las Vegas desert. Back to Silver and Black today here on Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM.
Welcome back. Silver and Black today here on this Friday. Hope you're doing well. We are talking all things NFL. Thanks again to Cody Benjamin from CBS Sports. Really laid out an interesting point of view there around Deshaun Watson, where he may end up, and the situation with the Raiders as a landing spot. So good stuff there, as always, from Cody. We appreciate it. His movie book, you got to pick up his movie book. If you're a movie buff at all, Why We Need the Movies, check it out on Amazon. Good stuff. We are back here, and of course, talking about the Nelson Aguilar story, Vic Taffer, which is really, again, people get caught up on the Aguilar, what he said and all that, but it's more about a story about accountability and maturity. And you have players who have been called out for maturity from their own general manager and coach, players like Damon Arnett. Again, good kid, great character. I'm not talking about any of that. I'm not besmirching anybody or saying that they're not good people or that they don't have the ability to be very good NFL players. But guys like that, young players who really kind of just need some guidance and some leadership in that locker room. Somebody's got to step up and be the vocal leader and police the locker room, basically. And that's all that is. This isn't Watergate. You know, it's not like you have to make a big whole hell of a deal about it. I know some people, we had Matt in Hoboken say that he really is disheartened by it and he thinks it's a really serious issue. And I understand his point of view and respect it very much. But I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that this is the story to end all stories and that it should be front page around the country and on every internet site in the world. I'm not saying that, but it is. There's a track record, folks. If you don't want to listen to or believe the story, that's fine. But all you have to do, go back to what Derek Carr said about the team not having the juice, about the team not being committed. Alec Ingold saying about consistency and commitment. Mike Mayock calling out his rookies about not being in the weight room. That's all indicative of the same thing. So if you don't want to believe a story, then go ahead. But, you know, that's on you, and you can believe what you want. We live in a time when you can find exactly what you want to believe on the internet anytime, or you can be open-minded and objective and say, well, okay, well, what is that? Is it indicative of something? Does it give us a insight into how this team can get better? This team crumbled down the end of the season. Something had to happen. It's not just a bad defense, folks. There's a lot of other things that go into running an organization and building a team. And I think these points are valid. And them, as you say, they, the Raiders themselves, players, coaches, general manager, have said so publicly, as has had the head coach. So you can believe the story. You can believe Keyshawn Nixon saying it didn't happen. But you have two respected journalists who said and have had numerous players, not one, two, or three, more than that, say that it happened. So you can get into the he said, she said, I really don't care. But I do think that the record and the performance and everything we've seen and everything they've said supports that story. Anyway, we're going back on the phone lines. It is Lou. Lou, you're on with Scott here on Silver and Black today.
Yeah, just a couple of comments. Just a second ago I was thinking about it, and I was thinking about Tom Brady up in New England. And I was thinking about people can hate Tom Brady all they want and talk about, you know, this and that. But Tom Brady and Bill Belichick have a culture. You know, when Randy Moss mm-hmm. came to New England, they said the Patriot way. And Randy Moss, you didn't hear a thing out of Randy Moss, did you? Not a thing, because they had the culture there. They had the culture going on, and they told Randy when he came in, you're gonna adhere to the Patriot way, or you're not going to be a part of our team. And, of course, he was one of the best receivers in the game, and he was very fine. Oh, what a great year they had. You know, but yeah. What is the difference, really, between Aaron Rodgers and Philip Rivers, other than Aaron's got a Super Bowl? Everyone, both of them throw interceptions. At crucial times, they're afraid to make the mistake. And, you know, so I don't know.
Yeah, no, but
I have no idea what the debate is all about, you know. What is Aaron Rodgers is not really that much, you know. Let him leave Green Bay if he wants to leave Green Bay, you know. Whatever, well, he's got a great arm, but still, you know.
Well, Lou, I think your point about culture as it relates to what's going on with the Raiders is, look, culture takes time. It's not like you snap your fingers and a winning culture, like you said, with Bill Belichick and Tom Brady in New England. That doesn't happen overnight. It's a very diligent process. It's something that you work hard at. It's something where you come in and you have players that are talented, but you know what? They don't fit the culture. And so guess what you got to do? You got to blow them out, find somebody else who does fit the culture. So the Raiders, that's why I said with all of this discussion today, it's not like it's some fatal flaw. I know some people think it's more serious matter than I do, and I'm not saying it's not serious. You have to address your issues in the offseason. This is one of the issues they have to address. It's just another thing. It's like not having a defensive end. You have got to figure out where you find senior leadership, where you find the people who will drive the culture. You have guys at the top who obviously have a plan for their culture. So where do you get the guys to come in and make that culture come alive? Where do you get the guys to come in the locker room and make sure that that culture is happening and is lived by the players that are in that locker room and on the field? And I think that's what they got to do. So while some people, you know, we live in a society today in the sports world where if you point out the the negatives, or I should say the deficiencies of your of a team, you have part of the fan base who will not accept it. It's got to be all positive, all great, all summer of love, rose-colored glasses. And it's not that way. Life isn't that way. How many of you in your life have no challenges? Okay? Doesn't mean you can't overcome them and reach greatness. It doesn't mean the Raiders can't overcome this and achieve greatness. But you have to acknowledge it, fix it, and move on. And so that's the point. All right. Thanks again for the call, Lou. We're going out to Eddie in Los Angeles. Eddie, it's Scott here on Silver and Black today.
How you doing, Scott? This is
good, brother.
Pretty interesting week we're having here, aren't we?
Yes, sir. It's never boring in Raider Nation, that's for sure.
No, it's not. I mean, I go back and forth myself with a lot of the comments that are being made. People freaking out and talking about, well, there's not enough leaders. There is no. Why did nobody ever say anything? It's like, are you not watching or paying attention? If you did, you would see. But you know, a couple years ago, you had Aaron Rodgers that comes out and pretty much tells it like it is in the media. Receivers not getting it done, and people are crucifying for him. Fans are upset that he's attacking his players, and he shouldn't be doing that over the media. He should be doing that in closed doors. Well, you know, Derek Carr was dropping subtle messages telling everybody what we would, if you're watching the team, you would see that not everybody was showing up prepared. Not everybody was ready to play. Okay, right. He was ready to play. Aguilar was ready to play. You got Trent Brown that obviously wasn't ready to play. There was a lot of reasons that weren't his fault. There's a lot of reasons that were his, but you know, we don't need to go through everything on that. The point is still the same. Not every player, especially on defense, showed up ready to play. And it was indicative because of the coaching. That's why I got coaching fired. I mean, if you're gonna look at the organizations that did good, especially in a COVID year, they had established players. They didn't have so much of an influx of young players, and they policed themselves. Yes, a lot of them did also wind up on the COVID list, just like Meredith teams out there, but they were able to sew it up and be successful. We had a combination of bad things. One, leadership starts at the top. It always starts from the ownership all the way down, and there's no way out there to get around that. And John Gruden allowed Trent Brown to be Trent Brown, didn't find him when he should have found him, and that sent a message to the rest of the players. They weren't able to have the control of a regular offseason where they can control players' weight, what they're doing, what they're thinking, how they're practicing. And this notion about we still need to change the culture, you don't change your culture from one draft to another. It takes time. I think we've been saying this for a while. John Gruden was signed for a 10-year contract for one reason and one reason only, to change the organization from top to bottom. It takes time, period. Until fans understand both sides, or I should say three sides of the ball, because we play with three different sides of the ball here, we're never going to be in a position to win until we focus on what the reality is. Every position takes time, not only for us to fill, but get coaching and everything gelling together. It just doesn't come overnight.
Well, no, and Eddie, that's the point I've been making, and I'm glad you bring it back up, because you know I'm seeing a lot of people contact me on Twitter and say, well, this person said it's not true, this player said it's not true. But I don't need somebody to tell me if it's true or not, because I can tell you that all you had to do was watch press conferences this year, especially towards the end of the season. And again, I call it out. Derek Carr talked about commitment. He talked about a lack of juice going for someone on the team making a push for the playoffs. Alec Engold talked openly about it.
Absolutely, multiple times during the season, and that's my point. And some players on the defense also said it. But we go back and we remember what we want to remember, but we don't actually sit there and analyze things for what they really are. So, you know, ESPN is now doing a special on Al Davis, and everybody's like, "Oh, I can't wait, come wait." Everybody forgets how long ESPN and everybody there would clown on Al Davis, would just on the Raiders. They just live to clown us. Call it a dysfunctional organization up and down, and now they're doing a special. We're supposed to all of a sudden forget that. I don't forget that. I remember it like it was yesterday. But the point is still the same. If we're paying attention closely, we're going to see the deficiencies where they need to improve, where they have improved, and if we're going in the right direction. I personally believe we are. This notion about having to trade players and go and get this one and get the other one, that's not what good organizations do. Only if you're a player away do they do that. But they don't ever mortgage their entire future for it.
Right.
We want to be successful. We have to go about it in a productive, single manner way.
And Eddie, and that's a point, man. And again, another great call. You had a great one yesterday, too. And here's the thing, and that's what I say about this story. Some people can look at this story and be mad about it and say, oh, this is lies, this is terrible, this is... And instead, I look at it, and they always talk... There's an old expression, right, which is sunlight is the best antiseptic, which is... Shine a light on where you have deficiencies. Like, for example, I used it earlier. The Raiders need another defensive end. Is that in question at all? No. Everybody knows they need a defensive end, okay? There's nothing wrong with that. That's not overly negative. That's fact. Clearly, the Raiders need some more seasoned leadership, too, in the locker room. It's not a fatal thing. And like you said, I agree with you. I think they're headed in the right direction. Other people will look at it and say that this new direction isn't working. I don't agree with that. I don't think that's true yet. I can't say that yet. I have not reached that point because I still think there's opportunity there, and I've seen good things that they've done, and I see the organization moving in that direction here in Las Vegas. So we'll see how that all goes. Okay, we'll get one more call in to Eddie again, man. Thanks so much. We're going to go to Raider Loke. Raider Loke, you're on with Scott here on Silver and Black today on a Friday.
Hey, what's up, Scott? Happy Friday, by the way.
Thanks, man. You too.
Hey, I kind of wanted to speak. I know everyone's talking about it, so I kind of just wanted to speak my point of view on the Nelson Aguilar comments that he made after the Miami game. A lot of fans are kind of reading those negative comments and are taking it very negative and are not starting to make their own negative assumptions. But I'm on the contrary. I may be on the minority. I believe that. From my experience, I believe we had that guy that kind of told it the way it is, and I believe that's where Nelson Aguilar is coming from. And if we don't remember, I mean, I know Derek Carr said his after the Falcons game that a lot of people didn't practice. So I believe that at the end of the day, I'd rather have a friend that's going to tell her how it is. Hey, if you don't improve in X, Y, Z, you're going to lead down the path in the wrong way than to not have a friend and tell me, hey, everything you're doing is good, because at the end of the day, we're all human. We're not perfect. We all make mistakes, and maybe that's where Nelson Aguilar is coming from. I believe he cares about this organization. Maybe he may resign. Maybe he just sees the potential that we could be heading, and maybe there was a complacency issue with the inexperience that we have in this team. I mean, we got a lot of young players, and a lot of our when we were 6-3, I don't believe that was an issue. We were all riding high. We were pretty much on the clouds, thinking we were going to go to the playoffs. Hey, we got the easy part of our schedule, and I believe that's where he's coming from. Maybe he's just speaking. Hey, and a lot of people are saying, well, how come Derek Carr didn't say anything? Well, maybe he just said, well, that's what I was saying after the Falcons game. So that's just kind of my two cents. I may be in the minority, but I believe Nelson Aguilar said this for the best of the organization, and I believe he comes with good intentions, even though he said it negatively. And when we're all pissed off, we kind of say things that we don't mean.
Sure. Yeah, and Raider Loke, you're wise beyond your years, man, because that's true. If you're in life, just everyday life for all of you out there, and you have a friend who's going to tell it like it is and says, hey, man, you put on weight. I'm worried about your health. Or, hey, man, you know that girl you're going out with? I saw her out with somebody else. I could not tell you and just leave it alone and stay out of it. But instead, I care about you, so I want to tell you. And I think Nelson Aguilar, in his locker room explosion, you know, here's a guy who was remaking his career. He kind of petered out in Philadelphia, lost favor there. And so he was working his tail off and performing at a high level, and he just wanted the other guys to have that commitment. And so to me, you're right. I think it's that situation where it's like, look, it's not, you don't have to look at this from the negative point of view. You can look at it from, this is how you build, this is how you get better, this is how you instill the culture that you want. If I'm Mike Mayock and John Gruden and I want that culture to progress, I want guys like Nelson Aguilar to tell it like it is when he needs to. And I'm sure there's other guys who did it too, and that we can talk about as well. And I'm sure there's others who would do it publicly, and there's others who would not do it publicly. But I think it's for the better. And to me, that's why I understand when stories like this come out, people automatically go negative. I don't look at it as a negative. I look at it as a positive. It helps teams learn who they are, what they need, and how they can improve. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to check in with Vinny Bonsignor, who's on his way back or is back from the Senior Bowl. We'll get his take on this. It's a little bit different than Vic's was or than mine was. So it'll be good to get some balance and hear what he has to say about it. This is Silver and Black Today here on Raider Nation Radio.
From Stabler to Plunkett and Allen to Jacobs, we've got your Raiders covered on Silver and Black today. Here's your host, Scott Culbranson.
Welcome back on this Friday, Silver and Black today, as we get ready to close out the show. Coming up at 4 o'clock, do not miss In the Huddle with Vinny Bonsignor and Lincoln Kennedy. That will be next. I'm sure Vinny will go through. There's nothing much going on today, so I'm sure he'll just talk about the Senior Bowl. I welcome in Vinny now. Vinny, how you doing, man? Are you back yet, or are you still in Mobile?
No, I'm still in Mobile, Alabama. I'm going to watch the game tomorrow and then head on home.
All right, good stuff, man. I'm jealous you get to watch the game. But, hey, so obviously we've been talking about the Nelson Aguilar story, and we had Vic on to start the show. And, Vinny, talk to me about this, because here's what I've been saying to callers, especially the last hour, because I see the story, and yes, there's some players saying it's not true, and you know, we've had different spins on it. You've had some commentary on it on social media. But the way I look at it this way, Vinny, is I don't look at this as a bad thing. I don't look at it as indicative of somebody coming out and saying that this team is failing and that the leadership's terrible. I look at it as part of the progress of building a culture that you want within your organization. And yeah, sometimes you don't want those stories to come out. But to me, that's how I look at it. I see people are like love or hate it, and they think it's terrible news or they think it's a lie. And I think that truth is always somewhere in the middle, and that when you're building a culture, a guy like Nelson Aguilar, whether or not he's back or not, that's the kind of guys you want. It happens more in locker rooms than we know. And it's just indicative of an organization that's growing and getting better.
Yeah, and real quick, because I've been working today, so I didn't get a chance to listen in. But what exactly did Vic say? If you can maybe summarize what it was that he said.
No, he just talked about that the players that he had talked to for the story, obviously the sources for the story, had explained the story to him, and that the issue, again, as we've heard publicly from Derek Carr, from Alec Ingold, from Mike Mayock, is just making sure that, you know, that guys need to be more committed, that they need to be more committed to the craft, to one another, to their coaching staff.
Yeah, and the response that I got, because there were people that reached out early this morning, and It was one of those situations where, as it was described to me, it was kind of it happened, and you know, it wasn't all that unusual in a locker room after a heated loss like that. You got to understand that was like the third loss that the Raiders had suffered, where you know the offense had given the defense the lead. It was a backbreaking kind of a situation on the heels of two other gut-wrenching losses against the Chiefs and the Chargers. So it was just a very frustrating, very emotional moment. But at least the people that I talked to were like, it happened, but it, as quickly as it happened, it was quickly forgotten. It was a guy in Nelson Aguilar who is a very, very competitive player. He lashed out a little bit, but it wasn't that big of a deal at that point, and it was quickly forgotten. And what was expressed to me today is, why is this coming out right now? why now, like a month later, over something that kind of came and went when it did happen? And I read the story, and I think I'm not going to put myself in Vic's head, and I have all the respect in the world for Vic, but I think he was trying to use that. Sometimes as writers, we use something in a way to connect something now, and I know that he was connecting two points, which was that happened that night, and then also some of what Mike Mayock said this week about the rookies, and a little bit of disappointment in the rookies and some of the things that a Henry Ruggs and a Damon Arnett have to do to get better. I understand what he was trying to do in connecting those two dots, but at least from the players that I talked to today, it was, we don't really understand why, like, it doesn't apply to right now. They couldn't understand the context and why this is all of a sudden a big deal over something that happened a month ago that they quickly forgot about.
Yeah, and I think, Vinny, that's the point I made actually in the last segment, was that, to me, I think people get hooked on the story of Nelson Aguilar going into the locker room, which, as I told him, I've been in locker rooms from college to pro locker rooms where you guys come in and they're angry after a loss, and they start screaming at people because they're frustrated, and it happens all the time, right? So I've been saying that people are focusing on that piece of the story when, if you read the rest of Vic's story, and again, like you said, you're not in his head, and we did talk to him about it, and you can listen to it when you get a chance, but in essence, he was talking about just the idea of accountability within the organization all the way to the top. And so sometimes you're right. As writers, you use tools to kind of get people to walk people along that path. And what ends up happening in our society is that, you know, we have the attention span now of like 3 seconds. And so people read that story and then they start sharing it and they haven't even read the whole story and what the takeaway was, and they jump to that. So I understand that. And I understand why players on timing. To me, the timing is interesting just because, look, you have Mayock coming out. He's called out his young players. I mean, he has. And your interview started it, right? You talked to him and then to Sean at the...
I have to push back a little bit. There was no calling out. It's not... And I think that we're sometimes guilty of it too in how we phrase things. There was no... I talked to Mike Mayock about this very thing with the rookies. He didn't call anybody out. He just, I mean, much like he said, hey, last year when I talked to him at the Senior Bowl about, Max Crosby, and he's like, he had a good year, but he has to now figure out a way to combat what the other teams are going to start doing to him next year. So
that's fair. I agree.
It's just being a reasonable, like, okay, so this A, B, and C is what, you know, Damon needs to do. A, B, and C, this is what Henry Ruggs needs to do. And it wasn't like that's what I sometimes, you know, I'm not pointing any fingers at you, but I sense this a lot on Twitter and on social media, calling him out and he threw him under the rug. It's just a reasonable,
Vinny,
there's things that everybody needs to do to get better, and this is what Henry Ruggs needs to do to take his game to the next level. There's no calling out. And certainly, when I talked to Mike, and I talked to him extensively, there was never any kind of a tone of calling out. It was just, these are the things that we need Henry to do from this year to next year. And you could say the same thing about Darren Waller and Derek Carr. Everyone is in the pursuit of getting better. If you're not getting better, you're getting worse or standing pat, and that's not good either. So
I appreciate you saying that too, because I always say this. I say this to my kids. So sometimes, Vinny, you're teaching me a lesson, which is always great. Which is words are strong and important, and the words you use at a certain moment can change the trajectory and the tone of a discussion. So yes. I agree with you, not calling out, but he talked about the need for those guys to be more committed around nutrition and weightlifting and stuff like that, being in the weight room. So you're right. And so we take those words, and I think because we spit them out quickly and because we can do it with our thumbs on a phone, that sometimes it devolves into something that it's not. So I appreciate that, and it's true. But I think too, again, I think this is not – I don't think this is like I've been saying, it's not a fatal issue. It's not like a big deal. You take it, you use it, you learn what you can if there's something to learn there, and you move forward, right? And to me, right, this organization's at a very important point in changing that culture, in developing what they want this culture to be with inside the organization. They've already started that, but it's a progress. It doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah, and I think that also, and I don't know this to be the case, but I'm going to assume that this was probably something that was told, you know, to Vic when it happened. You know, we all have our sources, you know, and sure, we all talk to people, how did it go and all that, you know, and at that point, if that's what happened, you know, he just didn't feel like Vic's been around a while. Maybe he just, you know, okay, he has the information, you know that it happened. Didn't write it at that time, but this is when he used it in a way to walk everyone down that path. And I think everyone's reading it, and I could be wrong. Maybe somebody did call him and say, hey man, I got to tell you something. What happened after that Miami game and blah, 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 blah. That happens too. But I tend to think that that's not what happened, but I think people are reading it as this is like this breaking explosive story that is just now, you know, bubbling, to the surface, and players are letting it out. And I don't think that that's what it was either. And so that's how people are reading it, though. Like, it's like this big breaking story. And again, the feedback that I'm getting is like, this isn't that part of it isn't the story. You're right. The story is this culture of accountability, that they're trying to build, and they're not quite there yet. There's a lot of young players on this team. We talked let's talk about that nutrition. Remember earlier this week, I think it was, I told a story about LeBron James in the locker room before games ordering McDonald's, literally giving, you know, money to the ball boys to go run up to the concourse, get me some chicken McNuggets and some fries. This is before the game. You think LeBron James eating McDonald's anymore like that? No, of course not. He's like drinking wine before games sometimes, but or at least the ones that he goes to watch. But, you know, he's on a whole other level in terms of the nutrition. It's something that even young players have to learn and have to adjust to. And again, it's not calling anyone out. It's not pointing any fingers. It's like, this is the process of becoming an NFL player. These are the things you need to focus on. And, man, I just for me,
and building,
it's just...
Well, building a championship culture, too, right? You don't go from being where the Raiders were to being a team that wins three or four championships overnight, and it takes time. And there's a lot of hard work, and there's sometimes when you fall through on things and you got to fix it. And just like you need player personnel, too, to fix your defense, you need to be able to do that, too, with leadership, and that develops over time. Vinny, as always, man, it's great because I love your viewpoints and your experience. So thanks for bringing that to the discussion. And I know you'll continue this discussion coming up at 4 o'clock. Have a safe trip home, my friend.
All right. Thank you very much, man. Have a good one.
All right. There you go, Vinny Bonsignore. Always good to get the other perspectives out there from folks. So great sage stuff there from Vinny Bonsignore, who's done this a long time and really brought some good thoughtful stuff and corrected me on my language, which he was right. And I agree. And so good stuff there. I hope you guys enjoyed the show today. It'll be up on our podcast feed here shortly. So if you missed it or if you have somebody you want to listen to it, go check out our podcast feed on anywhere you get your podcast. For Chris Chapman back in the studio, I am Scott Colbranson. Thanks to everybody. We'll talk to you guys on Monday. This has been Silver and Black Today here on Raider Nation Radio.